Well, hey, this is your old friend Bill. Whenever I find myself in Davis, I'm busy putting the fun in fundraising. But when I'm not, I always listen to KDVS 90.3 FM. And you should too. Go Aggies!
This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
War. What is it good for? We're sorry to report that Edwin Starr, the singer and producer of the song with which we opened, passed away last week at the age of 61. He died of an apparent heart attack in, I believe, London. Mr. Starr's biggest success came with War, a number one hit in 1970 during a time of growing anti-Vietnam War protests. Well, war certainly is topic A, and we're going to talk about it a bit today, although we're going to also try and get away from it a bit today. Although Mr. Edwin Starr's song of protest, dating back to 1970, certainly is one that's a bit appropriate to use in our program, we think we've stumbled upon one that's even more appropriate. Well, I think that just about everyone acknowledges that money and oil has something to do with the conflict in Iraq, and I think we're going to be joined in weeks to come by James DiEugenio, author and educator from Los Angeles, who's going to talk about his interesting new book, which is in the bookstores, or should be in the bookstores very soon, called The Assassinations, dealing with some of America's more notorious, relatively recent political murders. Jim has a lot of interesting things to say about that and other topics, and I think he'd be one to follow the money trail with us as we examine just how much oil and money had to do with the decision to go to war with Iraq. I think it had quite a lot to do with it. Let's get away from the war for a bit, shall we? In our second segment today, we're going to go to an exclusive interview down in Los Angeles, California, with a Bob Buckley, plaintiff and winner of a very large suit against tobacco companies. So we'll be having an exclusive interview with him on that subject, which I think you'll find very interesting. Picnic Day is coming up here this weekend, 2 days from now. So I think we should promote this very interesting open house that takes place annually, where UC Davis basically opens its doors and shows its stuff to the world mostly consisting of the parents of students who are shelling out their hard-earned cash to put the kids through college, eh? But that's probably not true. The students themselves get to enjoy a lot of wonderful exhibits, and alumni like myself love coming back to see some of the unique offerings you will find at UCD. You'll have exhibits in pomology, agronomy, things you don't find down at UCLA or perhaps at Berkeley. And they do a great job, and I can't recommend it highly enough. We're going to look around with our correspondent and occasional co-host, Steve Alexander. And we'll tell you more a bit about that in the upcoming segment, I think. We're going to have a report on next week's show about Picnic Day. Now, for more information, of course, you can go to the web. You can consult UC Davis Magazine, which I think you get if you're a member of the Cal Aggie Alumni Association. And I think I need to basically put a little plug in for this current edition of UC Davis Magazine. On page 10, an article on one of our cohorts here at KDVS in Public Affairs Broadcasting, This Week in Science. Gets quite a nice little write-up here. I didn't realize that two of the three members of This Week in Science are alumni of the UC system. Actually, Ted Dunning was not a UCD-er. He went to UC Berkeley. But the three of them, Kirsten Sanford, Greg Yen, and Ted Dunning, have come together on a show every Tuesday morning, which you'll hear right here on KDVS 90.3 FM. And I heard it this week. They did, as they usually do, a good job of talking about science topics in a provocative and interesting way. So I think that you should probably tune in on Tuesday mornings to the program. And I would like to add that just because Greg is the public affairs director here at KDVS, I'm not sucking up to him. No, the guys do a good job. You should listen in. Ted Dunning, I learned on this week's program, is going to be gone for the next 6 weeks as he takes helicopter lessons. I'm looking forward to an update on that because that's something I'd like to do myself one of these days. Now, when you take a look at a thing like UC Davis magazine, I think that most alumni turn to one section ahead of any other. That would be the class notes section to see if somebody you know turns up and maybe follow what they've been up to. What strikes me is how in recent years these things have expanded into the more recent graduates. For example, we learned that a graduate from the class of 02, that would be 10 months ago, is an after-school assistant for emotionally disturbed children in the Sacramento area. And she says she enjoys working with children in a therapeutic environment. I don't know. Do we need that kind of update 10 months after graduation? I was thinking more the ones that interest me are more like, you know, obviously being an alumni from a long time ago, people from my era back in the 70s. To snag one, just James Alexander, class of 76, and his family are living in Pango Pango, American Samoa, where he is production operations manager for the Samoa Packing Company. Now, when I find an alumni of my illustrious university is living in Pango Pango, I just, it somehow just hooks me. Another example here. Class of 74, James Barkovich was elected to a four-year term as Secretary General of the World Federation of Neuroradiological Societies, an organization of 21 such national and regional societies. I find that to be a rather baffling entry, but, you know, it just interests me. All right, at this juncture, I have to insert a fine bit that I've saved that segues so perfectly in the discussion of alumni and alumni magazines. An article here from, it might be Harper's. Actually, I think it is Harper's Magazine from the late 1980s by a man named James Nelson. The article's titled, Dave Henderson Was Becoming an Embarrassment. Now, Nelson obtained the job of being the writer of the class notes column that appears in each issue of Yale Alumni Magazine back in the early 80s. Let me excerpt a bit from his article. Mr. Nelson notes that in 1984, Dave Henderson, for 41 years following his graduation in the class of 43, had left Yale entirely alone. No one in the class reported hearing from him. He sent no news to the class secretaries, and he sent no money to the alumni fund. Moreover, when it came time to bring out a new class directory, Dave didn't even bother to send along his address. It was as if he didn't exist. It was not until early 1984, in fact, 18 months after I'd taken on the task of assembling the class notes section for the alumni magazine, that anyone heard from Dave. His first message came in the form of a short postcard from Mexico. Dave Henderson reports that his company finally lost its long bout with Chapter 11. Says Dave philosophically, I didn't really mind. I was sick and tired of trying to breathe life into that damn thing. Dave says he's had several pleasant conversations with two class members that he met at the Betty Ford Institution last fall. Nelson notes that more letters were appearing from Henderson. And before describing that, he said as follows. A few words about class notes in general. As everyone knows, they're a very popular item in every alumni magazine. No matter how relevant or flashy the editors try to make their lead articles, the first thing alumni turn to, if they turn to anything at all, is the back of the book where the class notes are buried. But if your class notes are anything like mine, in a class of 850, there are 25 active, extroverted, well-placed members whose names seem to appear in the column in boldface in each and every issue. There are also 825 normal folk, drudges and geniuses alike, whose names since graduating have appeared once or twice, or more likely, not at all. This isn't elitism on the part of the class notes secretary. Several times a year, every member of the class is encouraged to send in news of himself. The 825 average Joes and Jills ignore the request. The active, voluble 25, on the other hand, send in their news. And send, and send, and send. Notes Nelson, the nature of the news, of course, has something to do with this. If you've just been named to the board of the Fortune 500 company, you're a bit more likely to send in your news than if you've, you know, been at the same nothing job for 29 years and your kids are still tie-dyeing t-shirts. To be honest, Nelson said, a principal reason I took on the class notes job was to search for the silent 825. I wanted to hear about what they were doing. So he sends out requests for news, but for every 20 letters he said he sent out, he got back, well, maybe two. Noting that there are days indeed, with deadline near and copy short, when a class secretary may feel a strong urge to invent. In November 1984, the following appeared from Dave Henderson. Back in Cancun earlier than expected, thanks to Marge and self having been put under boat arrest for 10 days in San João de Monte, a tiny port town north of Recife, Brazil, for suspected trafficking in illegal substances. The whole thing was poppycock, of course, and ended only after we gave a lavish party on the boat for the entire police department, their wives, girlfriends, and God knows who else. And Dave's messages kept coming. It was as though, having finally pulled the stopper from the bottle, he couldn't keep the contents from gushing forth. April 85. Dave Henderson sends several color photos of his fabulous Cancun home. Marge and I plan to have the whole family here for Easter, providing the court will modify the terms of our daughter Sandra's parole to permit her a brief trip out of the U.S. If she gets turned down, we'll gather instead at the plaza for a week. Incidentally, watch for Sandra's book, Triple Cross, which will be out in September. I believe it will cause quite a stir in the intelligence-gathering community. February 1986. Dave Henderson. Just back from a quick trip to Paris to attend our daughter Karen's wedding to Adelo Katakunle, number three man in Zaire's Ministry of Tourism. This is Karen's third marriage, and we're hopeful that Adelo's sense of humor and impressive good looks, he's 6'7", 290 pounds, mean he's Mr. Right for her. So Nelson starts upping the ante. The next communique, Dave Henderson reported that Burt Lancaster was with him down in Mexico and was followed by Imelda Marcos and her entourage, which stayed 10 days. He notes, I was beginning to wonder if Dave's classmates had taken any note of his letters or of his invitations to join them in Mexico. Even if he hadn't been well known as a student, I thought his recent letters should have piqued his classmates' interest just a little. So in December 86, he said, I printed the following. Dave Henderson writes, Marge and I are heartsick that in July, pirates boarded our motor yacht Triunfador II as it was passing through Malacca Straits. Stripped it clean, then opened the seacocks, sending the most comfortable cruiser we ever owned to the bottom. Two of the crew were killed scuffling with the boarding party. The other 10 were put out in lifeboats. They drifted 36 hours before being rescued. Fortunately, Marge and I had disembarked in Dar es Salaam and flown back to Johannesburg to check on some of our investments. We're now battling with our Panamanian insurance company about the sinking. They claim it was an act of God. Now, no one was making much of a fuss about these letters until Herb Cain, and I remember when this happened, published in his column an excerpt from Yale Alumni Magazine as follows. Dave Henderson includes pictures of the launching of his new boat, Triunfador III, says Dave. Our shiny new putt-putt was to have been 163 feet overall, but after Marge's father kicked the bucket last year, we figured we'd go another 30 to 40 feet. So we redid the whole plan, and now it's 197 feet, stem to stern. which caused Herb Cain to react in horror over this guy's cavalier treatment of the death of Marge's father, etc. A Yale graduate then mailed Herb Cain's column to the Yale president. The letter commented first on the poor taste exhibited by the Hendersons in lengthening the Triumphador 3 by 34 feet as a direct result of the death of Marge's father, and second on Dave's even poorer taste in writing about it. Implicit was a third comment on the notes secretary poor taste for having included the item. A short time later, Dave's letter gained a national audience when The New Yorker reprinted it as a column filler under the heading Department of Lifestyles, Old Eli Division. Well, thanks to Herb Cain and The New Yorker, the letters started pouring into Yale from around the country, which caused the higher-ups at Yale Alumni Magazine to decide to edit their editor of the alumni notes column. They decided they were not going to print anything further from or about Mr. Dave Henderson. So Nelson wrote Dave's obituary, tried to get it in, called the editor, pleaded his case. The editor lectured him at some length, he said, on the innumerable reasons why he himself would rather die than run it. So reporting in Harper's Magazine for the first time was the actual story of the death of David Underhill Henderson, Yale class of 43, which I will close with. On a somber note, I have a letter reporting the death of Dave Henderson 3 weeks before Christmas. From their home in Cancun, Dave's wife Marge writes, "We were about to take Triunfador 3 through the canal, and with all the unrest in Panama, Dave thought it would be a wise precaution to arm the crew with assault rifles. He'd gone ashore in Belize to try and buy some. As he was walking back to the boat empty-handed, he was struck down by a speeding pickup truck loaded with mangoes. He died on the way to the hospital." Author Nelson notes that, in closing, that in the midst of unlimited corporate success, academic and professional achievement, philanthropy, public service, and a happy family, Dave Henderson had provided a cheerful example of greed, insensitivity, and wretched excess. I must say, every time I read the UC Davis Magazine's alumni section, I have to smile a bit and think of Mr. Dave Henderson. Stay tuned for our second segment, where we're going to talk to our old pal, Steve Alexander. And in our third segment today, we're going to take up a little bit where we left off last week after our talk with Dr. Lynn Roller here at UC Davis about the ancient history of the Tigris-Euphrates, what today is known as Iraq. We're going to round out that discussion a bit with a bit more interesting history. You're listening to Radio Parallax. I am your host, Douglas Everett, and this is, as always, KDVS 90.3 FM. Let's take a short break.